A global corporate tax could be in place before the summer is over. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. That is the feeling from the outgoing Secretary General of the OECD, Angel Gurría. He believes global cooperation on a corporate tax regime will be helping the worldwide recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic by making more funds available for governments, as he puts it, in desperate need of revenue. Mr. Gurría told the BBC's Andrew Walker this morning the new U.S. administration has been the key to putting this kind of plan into action.
I think it's fair to say that Mr. Gurría thinks there is now a good chance of an agreement fairly soon. He's actually standing down in a few days' time, so he won't actually be there to sign it himself. He was, I think, quite downbeat before the change of administration in the US because there was some resistance to the idea of a minimum global rate of corporation tax. And the US wanted to have this system known as safe harbor, which Mr. Gurría sees as being something like an option for companies to be taxed or not on this basis. And he clearly does think something fundamental changed with the new administration.
Absolutely. The answer is completely, totally yes. And right now, this turnaround for the United States has not only got us back working, but also is now leading with this minimum tax idea. Now they're proposing a 15% minimum tax, around which I think we have a very, very good chance of coalescing, of converging.
So what kind of timeline does Mr. Gurría think that this will get over the line? And does he expect any opposition from other countries, or was the U.S. sort of the last man standing on this?
He certainly sees the U.S. as being a major obstacle in previous months. And he is really quite upbeat about some agreement being done at the end of this week in the G7, the major economies. Now, that's not the forum where it really has to be signed and sealed. But if you do get that agreement, then you've got major momentum. He thinks there's a decent chance of it being done perhaps as soon as July.
And as you say, his term is now coming to an end at the end of this week. So, you know, he's overseen two major economic crises during his time at the OECD. What are his reflections on that?
He sees clearly one of the lessons he's drawn is that we really do need governments to come to the rescue, as it were, in these kind of extraordinary situations. And one of the consequences of the previous financial crisis is that actually a lot of the repair work that was done at the time, it might seem in some ways this is a completely different crisis we have now, but the repair work done at the time does mean that we don't really have the worries about the stability of the financial system that we might well otherwise have had.
The BBC's Andrew Walker. Thanks for your time.
My pleasure, Victoria.
Checking the numbers now, stocks in Asia followed Wall Street higher today as worries eased about inflation and the possibility of higher interest rates. China's currency, meanwhile, hit its highest level against the dollar in 3 years. The Pan-European Stock 600 Index hit its own fresh record today. It's up about 0.4% on the session. Shares of Shaftesbury, the property giant that owns Carnaby Street, Chinatown, and other big chunks of London's Soho and Covent Garden, are down 2.2% this morning. It posted a more than $480 million loss for the 6 months ending in March. That's due to the effects of England's lockdown measures. But the company's boss, Brian Bickelt, said he is already seeing a turnaround.
People came back in considerable numbers. We're up to pretty quickly back to 40% of normal footfall. And that's now starting to grow as we've gone through the second stage of reopening, which means restaurants and bars can start using some of their internal capacity. Well, obviously, we need the government to say it's OK to go back to your office. Well, they may only be working 3 days a week, but they'll make the most of that time and they'll be out supporting the shops and restaurants.
That's Shaftesbury boss Brian Bickle there. Well, as London's consumer-centric neighbourhoods begin to buzz with activity once again, so too is the city's famed Savile Row. For more than 500 years, the who's who of royalty, politics, and business have sought the services of the street's bespoke tailors. Taj Full is head of retail at the 171-year-old shop Huntsman. He told me how the pandemic has encouraged more technological integration into his company's centuries-old suit-making tradition.
We had our first robot delivered in May, then, and we were fully up and running in August. So since August, we've been doing various fittings, seeing new clients, even did a fitting from London to Korea to show how it works. And I think it's just been incredible from the perspective of it is like having your cutter in the room, and that's why it's called the teleporting bespoke service.
And that's the thing. So the idea of this robot is to be able to have a custom suit fitting experience virtually.
Exactly. And I think the main factor is you're in eye line with your cutter. You're not losing that engagement. It's just essentially the cutter has his arms behind his back and everything else is operating as normal.
And you have somebody there physically taking measurements as well.
Yeah, so the assistant that works with us on site is an assistant that has been trained by the cutter. So we're fortunate enough that we have really good connections with London College of Fashion. So in Singapore, they had recommended an assistant to us. In Japan, one of our coat makers moved back to Tokyo, so we were able to use him. So we've actually kept it quite close to home from that perspective. And essentially, they're just the hands for the cutter. They will wrap the tape measure around where they need to and just let the cutter know what the measurement is. And the cutter will take still images, video recordings. The images are really detailed for what we get. And the cutters call it a rock of eye, and they're able to just look at a garment and know exactly what they need to do. The chalk marks and pin marks are just there for memory. So being able to have that in a picture as well, if anything, they're getting a more superior garment now because we weren't able to do this so easily before. I think there's been a bit more of a acceptance for technology since the pandemic with our clients. I think had we introduced this 5 years ago without a pandemic, clients might have been, oh, I don't want to do that, I'll just wait for you to come. But I think now technology has taken a big step forward, especially in video technology. This has really helped.
That's the key, right? Is this allows you to reach customers who you were only able to reach beforehand once or twice a year.
Yep. And also new customers. I think the biggest thing that came off of it was the press. And when clients saw the press, it was almost like, I've got nothing to do. I want to try that. And that was the most fun part. We hosted in Taiwan an event where clients were trying 26-year-old whiskey whilst having a fitting, talking to us via a robot and having their garment fitted. Whereas if we did that here, it almost feels like there was so much planning and prep that would have had to have gone in with it. There in Taiwan, William Grant are the specialists in whiskey, we're the specialists in suits, so it came together very easily.
That is some futuristic stuff, I must say. Now, this technology, I imagine, is not cheap. So is this a kind of permanent addition to your business model? Will you be rolling it out more permanently once the pandemic really is well and truly over?
It's supplementary to the business. And to be honest, it was no more expensive than a laptop. The biggest element of it is shipping. Once you get the robot there, passing things through customs has been the trickiest. When we can travel again, we're biting at nib to really get out back to Dubai, Shanghai being one. We've got quite a big client base in Beijing and Shanghai. You need to be able to engage with these customers. So this will be supplementary. So rather than your suit being 12 months, you're looking at a six-month period.
Taj Phul, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Well, if power suits are ready and waiting to be worn again, does that mean the power lunch will soon be back on the menu? Mr. Phul weighed in on that topic. You can find me on Twitter at Victoria Craig for a link to that conversation. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.